Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, as Pope Benedict ends his three-day pastoral visit to Lebanon, we have a report on Sunday's Mass in Beirut and the presentation of the Apostolic Exhortation. Tracy McClure, our correspondent in Lebanon, tells us more about this Mass and the Pope's appeal for Christians to be peacemakers. Father Lombardi's assessment. The director of the Holy See's press office responds to questions about this papal visit. Pope urges young Christians and Muslims to build up the future together. Tracy McClure reports on the Pope's address to young people on Saturday evening. And Eastern Rite churches explained. A Maronite priest and canon law expert explains the origin and the differences in liturgy and spiritual traditions of these Catholic Eastern churches compared to the Latin Church. Pope Benedict has just ended his three-day pastoral visit to Lebanon, during which he presented the Apostolic Exhortation, his document of reflections based on the deliberations of the 2010 Synod of Bishops for the Middle East. His final engagement before leaving Beirut Airport on Sunday evening was an ecumenical meeting held at the Syria Catholic Patriarchate that was attended by the Orthodox Patriarchs and representatives of Protestant confessions. Earlier on Sunday, Pope Benedict celebrated Mass at Beirut's waterfront area before a crowd of over 350,000 people and formally presented the Apostolic Exhortation document. At the Angelus prayer, the Holy Father launched a dramatic appeal for peace in Syria and neighbouring countries, lamenting that the first victims are women and children. Tracy McClure reports.
A sea of white baseball caps and a backdrop of Lebanon's snow-covered cedars for the altar. An image that reminds one how the Lebanese love to say how they can go for a day skiing in the mountains and then take a swim along the shore of this Mediterranean nation. Well, Sunday's Mass overlooking that sea was one of communion and witness. The Catholic churches of East and West, represented by their patriarchs and bishops, celebrating with the Pope of Rome this historic day when he delivered to them the document they've all been waiting for, the Apostolic Exhortation, concluding the 2010 Synod of Bishops for the Middle East.
Après avoir signé l'exhortation apostolique post-synodale, Ecclesia in Orient, Medio Oriente. J'ai la joie de la remettre à toutes les églises particulières.
Communion and witness, in fact, was the theme of that synod, and here at Sunday's Mass we saw the Latin Rite interspersed with chants and prayers of the Eastern and Byzantine churches.
As-salamu li jami'aikum.
In fact, the more than 350,000 people here came from all of the region's seven Catholic rites, and Orthodox and Protestants participated too in fraternal ecumenical communion. The lectern of the Mass, a simple but poignant symbol of peace. The Bible cradled amid the gnarled branches of a centuries-old olive tree, recalling the millennia that Christians have lived in these lands. Sunday's Gospel plunged us back into Jesus' time, finding him on his way to Jerusalem, where he would be crucified and then resurrected, in a holy land of which Lebanon is a part. Pope Benedict called this moment a turning point in Jesus' life.
Jésus se trouve à un tournant déterminant de son existence. Il monte vers Jérusalem, vers le lieu.
And this region, with its grand hopes of freedom and human rights, but ripped apart by conflict, is also finding itself at a similar turning point. And Pope Benedict showed Christians here the way to go, encouraging them to prepare for the year of faith beginning in October and being true servants to the needy and their neighbor. He said Christians have a vocation to serve others freely and impartially. Consequently, he said, in a world where violence constantly leaves behind its grim trail of death and destruction, to serve justice and peace is urgently necessary for building a fraternal society. He said Christians can render an essential testimony here in cooperation with all people of goodwill and by being peacemakers wherever they may be.
Je vous appelle tous à œuvrer pour la paix. Chacun à son niveau est là où il se trouve.
And he challenged clergy and lay to put the apostolic exhortation, a roadmap to their future, into practice in their lives, to rediscover life's spiritual dimension, and to work for greater communion within their church, among fellow Christians and all others. At the Angelus prayer, Pope Benedict launched a dramatic appeal for peace in Syria and neighboring countries where the tragedy of the conflicts and violence are all too familiar.
Pour les habitants de la Syrie et des pays voisins implorant le don de la paix.
Why so many dead, he asked. Violence and hatred invade people's lives, he said, lamenting the first victims are women and children. He appealed to the international community and to Arab countries that, as brothers, he said, they might propose workable solutions respecting the dignity, the rights, and the religion of every human person. Those who wish to build peace, he said, must cease to see in the other an evil to be eliminated. Invoking the intercession of Mary, Our Lady of Lebanon, whom both Christians and Muslims revere, the Pope prayed for the gift of peaceful hearts, the silencing of weapons, and an end to all violence in this country, in Syria, and all the Middle East. May men understand, he said, that they are all brothers.
Puissent les hommes comprendre qu'ils sont tous frères.
With the Pope in this land of ancient olive trees, cedars, and of hopes, I'm Tracy McClure.
The director of the Holy See Press Office, Father Federico Lombardi, gives his impressions of the papal visit to Lebanon in this interview with Tracy McClure.
Father Lombardi, could you give us your impressions of this visit?
My impressions are obviously very, very positive. If I compare the attitude with which I came, a certain preoccupation, how will the Pope succeed in giving his message? Will the people listen to him? And now we have positive answers to all these questions. Really, at least what we have seen here in Beirut, in Lebanon, was a wonderful encounter between the Pope and the Lebanese, the different parts of this complex society. The Catholic, obviously, of the different rites, but also the Muslim of the different communities. And the presence of the President of the Republic in all public moments of this trip was a sign of participation of the entire land to this historical moment. I think that the Pope had reason to come with courage and to say, yes, I am Pilgrim of Peace, and my presence will signify that we don't fear what happens around us. We announce in the love of God the peace for all men and women of the world.
Now, in his homily following Sunday's Gospel reading, in which Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, Pope Benedict said that episode marked a turning point in Jesus' life. And in a certain sense, the Middle East is also marking a turning point today. What was Pope Benedict inviting Christians here to do?
The Pope has given encouragement, given principle that we already know. He has not given new word or new solution, But this is not his duty. He is Peter that encourages and gives strong foundation to the faith of the Christians. And he has come to help all the Christians in their faith, in their love and in their hope, in particular in their hope.
That was the director of the Holy See's press office, Father Federico Lombardi, speaking to Tracy McClure. One of the highlights of this papal visit to Lebanon was Pope Benedict's meeting with young people on Saturday evening, many of whom had travelled from other countries, including neighbouring Syria, to attend the event. Tracy McClure picks up the story.
After a long day in the Lebanese heat, Pope Benedict found himself smiling and at home in this joyful gathering with thousands of young people from across the world who'd come for his words of encouragement as they face an uncertain future clouded by conflict, economic woes, and joblessness.
Nous tenons d'abord à vous exprimer notre gratitude. Merci pour votre visite au Liban.
They came from neighboring countries in conflict, from the Americas and as far away as Australia, in their own way suffering from a rising secularism and loss of human values. Young people from Syria braved the fighting raging in their country to pray here with the Pope Saturday and bring his message of peace back home. The Holy Father told them he admired their courage and to tell their families that the Pope has not forgotten them.
Je veux vous dire combien j'admire votre courage. Dites-vous à vos familles, à vos amis, que le pape ne vous oublie pas.
He is saddened by their sufferings and grief, and they are in his prayers. It is time for Muslims and Christians, he said, to come together to put an end to violence and war.
Il est temps que les musulmans et chrétiens s'unissent pour mettre fin à la violence et aux guerres.
Speaking like a father to his children and calling them to a revolution of love, Pope Benedict offered powerful words of comfort and reassurance to the Middle East's young people, represented so widely at this gathering. He spoke not just to Christians, but to Muslims who came in the hundreds to say they too are determined to live together with Christians and build a better future with them. Pope Benedict challenged them to do this, and when they are older, he said, to continue to live in unity and harmony with Christians.
Recherchez-vous des relations riches d'amitié vraies et nobles.
Looking at you, he said, it is vital that the Middle East understand that Islam and Christianity can live side by side without hatred, with respect for the beliefs of each person. Like the Pope, Maronite Patriarch Bishara Rai spoke of the political, social, economic, and cultural crises of today and the need to confirm the Church's young people in their Christian identity and their attachment to these lands, where violence all too often frightens them away.
Devant la croissance du phénomène du fondamentalisme religieux.
Here in Lebanon, just as many Christians as live here now also live abroad, having fled the violence of civil war and economic woes in search of a better and safer life. The Patriarch called on the Middle East's Christians to strengthen their faith in contrast to a growing religious fundamentalism that negates freedom of conscience and the right to be different so often in this part of the world. Addressing the Pope at the start of the evening, one young woman said now, more than ever, young people need the active presence of the Church in the Middle East, crushed by the weight of fear, desperation, and suffering.
Aujourd'hui, plus que jamais, nous avons besoin de la présence active de l'Église dans ce Moyen-Orient.
The Holy Father's presence in Lebanon, she said, defies the logic of war and desperation. It is a sign of peace and hope. Another young woman spoke of the immense difficulties confronting Christian families here today, the loss of the sacramental worth of marriage, atheism, religious and racial discrimination, and drug and alcohol addiction. She urged young people to bring the Christian presence into the political and social spheres, seeking the common good. The Middle East's young Christians, she said, aspire to peace, a dream of a future without war, a future where they can play an active role in the building, together with young people from other religions, a civilization of love, where freedoms are respected and human dignity is protected. Condemning all forms of violence, she called on young people here to be living bridges of dialogue and cooperation. These young people told the Pope they want to be protagonists in every part of society, and also in the Church and the new evangelization, bringing a youthful voice to the way the Church communicates through the media.
Nous, jeunes de l'Église, désirons aujourd'hui être de véritables acteurs du projet de salut.
The young Christians of the Middle East today, with the future in their hands, bridges of dialogue in a revolution of love. In Lebanon with Pope Benedict, I'm Tracy McClure.
Benedict's pastoral visit to Lebanon saw him meeting with the patriarchs of the different Catholic Eastern Rite churches, all of whom are united under the jurisdiction of the Pope. But what are the origins and the liturgical differences of the Eastern Rite churches compared to the Latin Church? Maronite Father Jean-Paul Kimes is a canon lawyer and an official at the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. He gives us a comprehensive explanation in an interview with Tracy McClure.
The first thing to clarify, the Catholic Church is actually composed of 22 different churches, all of the same equal dignity, all of the same structure, essentially. And included in these 22 churches is the Latin Church, all of which would be considered the Roman Catholic Churches. All of them are united under the jurisdiction of the Pope, the Bishop of Rome. The Latin Church obviously makes up the overwhelming majority of the population of the Catholic world. Between 94 and 96% of the Catholics in the world belong to the Latin Church. The other 4 to 6%, depending on which numbers you'd like, are divided among the 21 other churches. So we commonly speak of rites, but rite is, if you will, a bit of a reductive term, in that a rite refers to the liturgical and spiritual patrimony and its historical context of a particular church. At the very least, since the Second Vatican Council, the Church has adopted the language that all of these churches are just that. They're churches. They're not merely rites. So we would speak of the Maronite Church or the Melkite Church, as well as the Latin Church, all of which belong to the communion under the jurisdiction, the universal jurisdiction of the Roman Pontiff, of the Bishop of Rome. The Eastern churches, if you will, differ from the Latin Church in just that, in ways that they differ from one another. They grew up in different places, in different times, so in different historical, cultural, and linguistic contexts, but all of them trace themselves back to apostolic origin. And the history of the church develops under these five patriarchal sees.
But if I'm not mistaken, sure, you can trace the history of these churches back to their early Christian communities in, say, the Middle East and early Christian Byzantium.
Absolutely. All of the Eastern Catholic churches trace back to the very first days of Christianity, when the apostles left Jerusalem, taking the message of Christ with them. They traveled to major cities, the same as when Peter ends up in Rome. Other apostles went to different cities. Before Peter even came to Rome, he ended up in Antioch. So the churches of the Antiochene tradition count Peter as their founder as well. So the Antiochene Catholic churches of the Eastern persuasion, the Maronite Church, the Syriac Church, these, and even the, by distinction, eventually the Syro-Malabar and Syro-Malankara, trace themselves back to the Antiochene tradition, which grew up with Peter, if you will, as its first leader, as its first bishop. The same is true in Alexandria for the Coptic and Ethiopian traditions. And then eventually Constantinople, once Constantine moves the center of the empire to Byzantium, and Constantinople becomes, if you will, the new Rome, to honor it in the same way that Rome had been honored. St. Andrew is considered the spiritual father, the apostle that founded Christianity in Constantinople, and there develops the largest of the Eastern traditions, which is generally referred to as Byzantine. And of the 21 Eastern Catholic churches, 13 of them belong to this Byzantine tradition. So the other traditions, the Armenian, the Antiochene, and the Alexandrian, as well as the Chaldean, have fewer member churches because they have the remainder of those, only 8, trace themselves back to those 4, whereas 13 trace themselves back to Constantinople itself. But again, as you said rightly, all of them go back to the very earliest days of Christianity when the apostles left Jerusalem as they traveled spreading the message of Christ. The message of Christ was then implanted like a seed in smaller communities, particularly around the Middle East. And those communities, with their own linguistic and historical traditions, developed worshiping Christ, developed the same sacramental traditions that's found as well in the church in Rome.
Okay, but I'm a bit confused here because when I see an Eastern rite being celebrated, it reminds me quite a lot also of the Orthodox Church.
Well, exactly, because all of the Eastern Catholic churches, with the exception of the Maronite Church, have an Orthodox counterpart. The split between Catholicism and Orthodoxy is a much later historical development. The classic date is 1054 for the final, if you will, mutual excommunication of the Patriarch of Constantinople and the Bishop of Rome. But the distinctions, if you will, developed over time. But the liturgical traditions, even especially in the Byzantine Catholic churches, the liturgical tradition is exactly the same as those of their Orthodox counterparts. There are not major liturgical distinctions. The distinction is primarily one of jurisdiction, that the Byzantine Catholic churches recognize the universal jurisdiction of the Pope of Rome, whereas the Orthodox churches do not. And so liturgically, if even I, as a Maronite, were to walk into a Ukrainian celebration, it would be difficult for me to know whether it were an Orthodox celebration or a Catholic liturgy, at least until you got to the creed and the prayers commemorating the hierarchy. Obviously, in the Catholic Church, you'd remember the Pope. In the Orthodox one, you wouldn't.
Well, you mentioned your rite, the Maronite rite. So many of the Eastern churches, the rites that we've seen in the Middle East, many of their liturgies include Jesus' own language, the Aramaic, in much of the liturgy, at least in part or in the music that we hear.
Certainly. It's, again, part of the manifestation of the apostolic nature of these churches. The Maronite church in particular wears as a badge of honor that the words of institution at every liturgy are recited, actually chanted, in Syriac, which is a form of Aramaic that would be as close to what Christ spoke as we could have. Syriac is, again, one of the dialects of Aramaic, and again, one of those that actually lasted longer than Aramaic itself. So when a Maronite priest or a Syrian priest or any of the others that maintain the Syriac tradition, when they chant the words of institution and proclaim, "This is my body, this is my blood," those are actually the words that Christ himself would have spoken.
Okay, well, you have to explain something to me here. How did these various Eastern rites, I suppose, come about, or how did they separate each one into its own specific rite?
It's a historical reality that's hard to exactly codify and say there's a specific moment where you can distinguish one from the other. These are the traditions that grew. The Maronite church in particular, again, my own church, just probably the most significant moment would have come when 350 monks were martyred for the faith, for defending the Orthodox teaching of the Council of Chalcedon against their Monophysite brothers, when 350 of them were ambushed and slaughtered. In a certain sense, it was the martyr's blood that would have been a defining moment for the Maronite church in particular. For other churches, each has its own reality, but it's specifically a historical reality that develops over time in a particular place, in a particular linguistic and cultural context, so that the Maronite church in particular bears the marks of its origins in Syria on the plains of the Orontes River, but then having transferred itself because of persecution into the mountains of Lebanon, whereas, say, the Byzantine churches would have as their origin their connection to the ruler in Constantinople, the emperor in Constantinople, who would then send missionaries out to different parts, particularly in Eastern Europe, so that when these missionaries founded communities, they adapted the liturgy and the sacraments in a way that could be communicated to the local people. And so it's hard to explain, it's hard to put your finger on it, but it's just something developed over time, again, in particular places, in a particular context.
Just my curiosity as to if you guys spoke the same language, the Syriac speaking the Aramaic and the Maronite speaking the Aramaic, what ended up happening that separated you from being one unified church?
Sure, no, that's a great question. And again, unfortunately, there's not as good an answer as there is a question in this case, unfortunately. But it is, there were also differences in the communities. We have to think as well that, you know, a city like Antioch was a multinational city with many languages, with many different ethnic groups present. So we can't just think of it as a singular reality that all people who were in Antioch spoke the same language and came from the same tradition. So it's natural too that the differences that were present in the city developed. And you see that much more in the, if you will, the multinational, the international city, so that the Alexandrian tradition in Egypt, only two churches developed from that, the Coptic and the Ethiopian, because they were more isolated culturally and linguistically.
And today in the Orthodox Coptic Church, there are something like 8 million faithful there in Egypt. No?
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Coptic Catholic Church is a much smaller reality numerically. Mm-hmm. But that tradition, again, would have been one that later in time split between those that were faithful to the jurisdiction of the Bishop of Rome and those that chose the exclusive jurisdiction of their own patriarch. So that would be, again, the distinction between Orthodox and Catholic in a split reality like the Coptic tradition.
All these churches are in communion with the Holy Father.
Absolutely.
With the church here in Rome. But explain how that came about.
Again, with each church, there are different moments in time where this, in some it's a reunification process, in some it was a unification process where no unity had existed before. As we said, in the Maronite reality, there had never been a break. But particularly beginning in the 1400s with the Council of Florence, there is a concerted effort on the part of Rome to reunify, to reestablish the richness, the full richness of the Catholic tradition. And in particularly in Florence, is reaching out to the Armenians and this reconciliation with a small group of Armenians. This process is repeated in history with all of the Eastern Catholic churches, sort of one by one, at different moments, particularly around the Council. Again, there's another moment of great unification after the Council of Trent, when the Doctrine of Trent, if you will, which establishes the seven sacraments and defines the seven sacraments and really is a defining moment for all of the doctrinal issues of the Catholic Church, when those teachings are then carried on to all of the Eastern churches as a sign of their unity with Rome. But again, each church has its own history of how it came back into union with Rome.
That was Maronite Father John Paul Kimes speaking to Tracy McClaw. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.radiovaticana.va. Laudato Jesus Christus.